In this episode, my friend and author Barry Dyke and I discussed the public sentiment on the American Dream and his sixth and seventh book, Guaranteed Income 2. It'll likely be in two volumes. And then, of course, we never get together without discussing all the lively activities of Wall Street that may not be in your best interest. We had fun. Thank you for listening.
I would say 70-80% of the money taking over these life companies through these leverage buyouts and that type of thing comes from public pension plans.
What?
Oh, yeah. So yeah. All the money, how Wall Street is screwing everybody, they're using public pension money to screw everybody. And the thing is, you follow the money, and it's clear as day. So, you know, if you're like in Texas, like Texas teachers, whatever, these huge pension plans, okay, they funnel their money to Wall Street, and Wall Street in turn buys these insurance companies. And they fund it to people like Apollo Global or Blackstone or Ares Management, whatever. And they in turn, you know, buy these other companies. And you couldn't make this stuff up. So it's kind of like you're looking for the honest woman in the room, you know. So we help find people on the honest woman in the room. Because there ain't, when it comes to Wall Street, ain't that many honest women out there.
Why do you got to pick on the ladies? I mean, go to Wall Street. How many honest men are in the room? Oh, my gosh.
There's a lot of dirty guys in this business, too. So the whole thing is that, but if you pursue the truth will set you free. And, you know, it's, but the problem is that, because people can't save or they can't finance their own car, they're getting increasingly despondent.
Yeah, that kind of goes back to the, that kind of goes back to the article that you shared with me in the poll that was taken, published. And who'd you say did that poll? Goldman
Sachs? University of Chicago and Wall Street. University of Chicago is a reputable institution. Okay, everything James, everything I do is backed by third parties. So this is and it's just, and so the thing is, you want to imbue to your clients and future prospects and so forth. You need to be self-reliant, because unless you're big Wall Street or your big agriculture or big union or whatever, you're screwed. You know, and so that's why I'm trying to get people, give them the facts, and that's why I think I threw along the multi-employer pension bailout of the unions. Now the thing is, believe it or not, I'm actually very pro-union in a lot of ways. Okay, because they're some of the only people that are able to negotiate something a good deal for themselves. But the bailouts, what Biden bailed out the multi-employer, is criminal what they did. And I would say if you ask 99 people out of 100, they would have not a clue. Do you know anything about that, James?
No. No.
Well, they call it, so this was, they called him yeah, so actually I thought we may talk about this. So essentially, as you know, if I'm running a pension plan for a corporation like I'm IBM or General Motors, whatever, I comply with a body of law known as ERISA, which is very, very strict in your funding levels and so forth. But for the most part, public pension plans are actually exempt from that. But the real problem pension plans in this country are multi-employer plans, which are with the Teamsters and all that stuff. And I'm not anti-Teamsters, whatever, but they've been run like a show for 30, 40 years. And, you know, the Central States Pension Plan, which is the largest one, which was known as the Mob's Bank. And this is, people Google it, don't believe me. This is what the Department of State, or I don't know, the U.S. Justice Department called. And they discovered how, the Central State Pension Plan would end up being just a bank for the mafia. But make a long story short, unbeknownst to most people, Biden and So there was like 147 multi-employer plans which are underwater, and they're bailed out silently by Joe Biden, and they, as part of the Inflation Reduction Act, that's what I learned, it was the Inflation Reduction Act, and $96 billion out of that Inflation Reduction Act went to bail out multi-employer pension plans. Now, the funny thing is that all the only so Central States, which was the mob's pension plan, if you will, and I get into the more depth in it, but I'm not even into the book. But so that was the $36 billion. So I don't know if you knew about it, but $36 billion of taxpayer money went into that, into the Central States pension plan. But then there was dozens more, then there was big ones like bakery drivers and all these things. So there's roughly $90 billion went into pension plans. And my point is that, I mean, I can't even get people to help me fund some research, okay? But we're pouring billions into these failed plans. Just like we were also pouring billions into the failed retirement system in Ukraine, which drives me nuts. So we're one of the worst in the world, but we're dumping money into Ukraine to bail out their pension plans, or the central state, these union pension plans. And again, I'm not union. I'm actually very pro-union in a lot of ways. But no one really knows about this stuff. And actually, it wasn't that easy to find. What? You know, and I'm a pretty good big dog at that. But thank God for ChatGPT and which helped me get through a lot of this stuff, because they did not make this easy to find this stuff out.
Yep. I'm not surprised about that. You know, and I'm also not surprised about the sentiment of the all-American individual and family that says or feels like the American dream is out of reach, you know.
Yeah.
And fundamentally, part of that American dream is to the ability to own a home and raise a family without being a slave, to debt. But that's nothing new. They're just new iterations, right? And my point here, I want to make a point that, you know, I want to go back, the government doesn't have any money. So the whole $96 billion cost the American people, right?
Yeah.
The money, you know, the quote unquote money, and I'm using air quotes, that the government has was confiscated by threat of force and violence from the American people. The other was created out of thin air, which further robs very stealthily our wealth of the American people. So the government doesn't have any money that they first didn't take away, or they're going to take away in the future, you know, through inflation and under the radar kind of a thing, right? And so while we're funding all of this through the government, we are challenged. Maybe it's a lack of discipline. Maybe it's a lack of knowledge. Maybe it's a lack of, you know, effort, whatever. But we don't fund our own. You know, we don't. And that's, you know, what pains me is the American individual. It's the government is not going to do it for you. As a matter of fact, most of their actions are going to be detrimental to you and your financial health, right? Under the guise of, you know, who'll build the roads and, you know, it's for the children and all of the things that work to get you to say, oh, yeah, okay, and tolerate this intolerable situation that they're continually putting us in. And I'm not even trying to sound aggressive. I just want to encourage the listener, by golly, if you don't do something for you and your family, no one else is. No one else is.
And if you don't do anything,
you're funding everyone else's retirement anyway. The Ukraine. Who knew that the government was bailing out Ukraine's retirement plan? Well, who's shocked? I'm not shocked. So, and I think that part of this, the article, and they've got different stories. They even quoted a gentleman from Godly, Texas, which Godly, Texas is about 45 minutes from here, you know, out in the country, how him and his wife could afford a home, but he has some adult children now living with him or on the property and on the property because they can't afford their own home, you know. And let me say that, you know, Godly, Texas 30 or 40 years ago was nothing but cow pastures. And now it's an up and coming, or it's not, it's a bougie place to live now. So, and all that's a digression, but it's capital formation. You know, we don't know in America how to properly, on purpose, with intent, to accumulate capital. And we rely on others, we abdicate our responsibility to others. And I don't think that that's going to be a very successful outcome compared to if you took responsibility to an understanding at a level that it's like, oh, it makes sense to me to accumulate capital this way or that way, and then control the capital. I think that's the solution, is proper capital formation, capital accumulation on purpose with intent, and full control, or as much control as you could possibly have without being dependent upon a third party, whether it's Wall Street or Las Vegas or wherever. It's like, that's the solution to me. But it's slow, it's boring, and everybody says, do this. Oh, yeah, and discipline, too. I mean, man, I talk about discipline. If I had any extra, I'd share it with you. I don't have any extra, you know. It's like, and it's painful early. But it's worth it, in my humble opinion and in my experience, because I read this article. It's so true. It hits home. You know, the prices of homes are up. Maybe they're coming down now. You know, the mortgage rates are up. You know, you can't get rid of a 2% mortgage. There's one individual in here. They want to upgrade. They're comfortable, but they want to upgrade, but they can't get rid of their 2% mortgage. All of that's a lack of capital. Every bit of that is a lack of capital. That's the problem, because the criminals are going to do what the criminals do. That's why they're criminals. That's what they do. It's what are you doing for you, yourself, your family? And that's where the solution is. And even, you know, within, well, heck, if the life insurance industry is a great place, they're so good they become a target for the hedge funds and the private equity groups and all the pension plans. Why is it such a target? It's because they have capital, right? And they have a lot of strict regulations. I'm not saying they don't do the wrong thing from time to time and get into financial trouble and then be in a position where they have to be liquidated. Yep, that goes on. And so you want to avoid that for sure. But if the life insurance companies is a target for hedge funds, I mean, isn't that a clue, Barry? Wouldn't that be a clue? It'd be a clue to me that maybe it's worth looking at. Maybe I want some capital in there, but I don't want to control it and, you know, control the company into the dirt so I can profit. Not the same way that a private equity group would look at, you know, a life insurance company. So,
well, yeah, it's, you know, James, this is the whole thing. Wall Street, the whole thing is really, when you understand the tax code, and I do, everything's built on debt. And you know, when Drexel Burnham Land bet collapsed in 1989, you know how much capital how much money the whole operations were on? They were working on 96% borrowed capital. They had no freaking money. Okay, so
I'm not. You know, so
excessive debt.
Yeah, I wonder how much money, wealth, goods and services. How much capital and wealth did in that example, Warner Lambert, did they destroy? How much wealth and capital was destroyed through that whole endeavor.
Well, they destroyed executive life, the executive life companies, and there was First Capital, which they destroyed. Now, Michael Milken, he made, this is incredible, he made over $1 billion, at least $500 million back in around in the 80s. I mean, this is when, this is like, you know, $4 or $5 billion today. So the thing is that they extracted. Well, that's the whole Wall Street investment model too. If you look at any of these proxy statements, you look at any of the securities filings of Goldman Sachs or Morgan Stanley or any of these banks, you know, 40-60% of the revenue comes out as compensation. So they really don't build anything. They don't create a new iPhone or a new drug to help with cancer, something like that. They're just in the wealth extraction business.
Yeah, it's so, financial sorcery, you know. And then let me just say that, you know, Drexel, Burnham, Lambert, all right, there's a history. They didn't just wake up one day and you know, these three famous individuals, you know, very successful Wall Street people, created a company together. There's a history prior to Drexel, Burnham, Lambert.
Yeah.
So
it's always about other people's money. But I think what you're saying, James, really, is so the private capital formation is really, it's, you know, it's one of the best ideas there is in financial services today. There's no, bar none. The problem is we have to change as a country. We have to change our whole mindset. Now, I can't remember the exact figures, but this is in the next book. As a country, Americans borrow money they don't have to impress people we don't like, on a whole. Okay. If you look at the world's savings rates, something like Norway, now they have the North Sea oil and all that stuff. So their annual savings rate, annual percent of gross national product, they save 20% of their income. You know what the U.S. is?
It's below 4%.
Yeah, it's like 1.5%. It's
horrific. Isn't that low currently?
Yeah.
September 2025?
Yeah.
I really thought it was about 3.25. But
yeah, maybe it's around 3 now, but this is the OECD, Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, right? 2024. But also, you know, so we just don't save as a country, you know, we want to enslave them in debt. We want to get finance the cars. We want
education. The beginning. I mean, it generally, in my little experience, I mean, for me personally, it took me some time. You know, here I'm born into a debt slave construct, had no idea until much later in my life, you know, and been run through the ringer with debt. And, you know, I mean, I haven't filed bankruptcy, but I've had some hard times. Then, you know, to even come to and wake up and it's like, oh my gosh, this is a debt slave construct that you're born into. So I agree. And then too, if you go back to the discipline, the savings, you know, and you know, you Nelson Nash was, you know, a mentor of yours. He was my mentor. You know, he created the idea, discovered the idea that you could become your own banker, and his book's available, Becoming Your Own Banker. My point here that I want to make, and then, you know, that he printed the book in like 2000, the fifth edition, which it came out in 2008, which is what most people have today. And you're going to go buy, it's going to be the fifth edition. It's and then the bastardization of his work that has occurred across the financial landscape. You know, everybody knows, you know, infinite banking, or can say infinite banking, and barely spit out Nelson Nash's name and have no idea of what the work is really about, which is fundamentally saving, long-term capital formation. You cannot bank unless you're a criminal with nothing. You have to have something. You have to have a pile of money or access to a pile of money before you can morally bank, because this fractional reserve banking system from Babylon that we have today is nothing's moral about it. I digress a little. And my point is, even Nelson's work, the fundamental of that is savings. It is long-term life insurance premium payment that has a high cash value that consistently grows and increases year over year, compounding your whole life. I was going to say forever, but you know, we're all going to graduate. Anyway, hope I don't want to belabor that point, but I'm shocked to hear that the savings rate could be as low as 1%.
It's horrific. I mean, when you look at all the statistics, that's why I took a lot of time to do this book. You know, the happiness scores of the country. This is, you know, when people save and they have better retirements, they're a lot more happier. It's really sad when you start looking, you compare, and I love America, don't get me wrong. When you look at our happiness scores, our savings rates, you know, the inability to afford a home, the loan on auto loan defaults, James, I think it's something like 22% now. It's like, oh my goodness. So
are you kidding me? For a premium?
No, it's very high, you know, and I have it all back up. I got the data from Edmunds and, you know.
Oh, but look, you know, we just closed on a car. My daughter's who's going to go to, you know, it looks like she's going to go to college in Chicago. I've been all over the University of Chicago campus. Beautiful.
She's going there?
Well, no, they only have like a 3% out of state acceptance rate, right? So okay. You got to know somebody to know somebody to know somebody. I don't know. But maybe she can go somewhere else and, you know, transfer in after a couple. I don't know. Very impressive, the university, the campus. But my point there is that she just purchased her first car. Well, she's 17. She can't own anything. Okay, so we purchased her first car. And the loan rate, and I might do an episode on it later, might not. But the loan rate, and it was Hyundai, so Hyundai Finance was like 4.5 or 3.9. It's either 3.5, 3.9, 4.5, or 4.9, right? And you mean to tell me that you can literally go borrow money at 3.5%? Yeah, money that didn't exist, right? Or the price of the car is built in to make up the difference. And I talked to a banker, because he's my friend. I like to talk to him. He's a smart guy. I like to talk to smart people. Right? I'm just asking him, you know, it's like, what are the loan rates on automobiles? He's like, the best they could do is 7 on a brand new car. And then we didn't really talk about pre-owned cars, but very strict, you know, their requirements can't be over 5 years old or whatever. I've covered in the past, you know, that won't finance a pre-owned car if it's older than 5 years, and you're not getting anywhere close to 7, 8, or 9%. Nowhere close. And then I've seen in the previous years, loan interest rates on pre-owned automobiles 14, 15, and 16%.
Yeah, higher. Yeah, and then the subprime is really big. Matter of fact, but that's a problem too. A major subprime auto lender, Tricolor, went bankrupt in Texas this past week. What? Yeah, they went bankrupt. Yeah. So I think maybe we can't save everybody, but if we can help people one at a time, get in a better capital position, learn to save first. And you know, I'm not against investment, I'm not against the market, it's just our priorities are so ass backwards at this point, James. And
I can see it, you know, when the American people feel like they're behind and they can't get ahead, you know, and even this article, you know, and I read another one that talks about the triple whammy. You know, you have inflation, you have high interest rates, and then you have tariffs. I mean, hell, we can all point out a great reason why we can't do something, right? It's easy. And I'm not saying everybody's perfectly healthy and able to be productive and creative. I'm not saying that. I mean, I'm not I'm not heartless or unaware, but it's like, it's painful to go without something today to accumulate capital for the future. It's a trade-off. That's all it is. It's a complete trade-off. No, I don't want to save any money. And you know, we've all had these conversations all throughout our life. There's two fundamental components, right? It's income and expenses, right? If you can't spend less than you make, you might have a conversation with yourself, right? And whatever the outcome is, you have to be able to save money.
Yeah, you have to be disciplined, James. It's like if you want to get in shape, you got to go to the gym, where you got to eat right and sleep right and all that stuff. You know the stuff. If you want to become, you know, a great teacher and a great lawyer or banker, whatever the case, you have to be. I always say, if you want to become a disciple, you got to be disciplined. You know, and so whoa. And I think, but in America today, everything's built on debt. And but it's like a Tower of Babel when you have all this debt. And now the thing is that I can go out buy a company to leverage, buy it with, and I get JP Morgan and Morgan Stanley and everyone else to back me up. And buy a company with boatloads of debt. But if I default on it, sometimes they'll give me a pass on it, but because this is the way these guys work. But if you're individual, you're screwed. I mean, so the whole thing is you really have to be more self-reliant. Otherwise, God bless you. I mean, it's going to be very, very difficult. And I think as money becomes more dear, I think it's going to be more important to have your own capital.
Yeah, I think that, you came down last October 2024 and you spoke at our Banking with Life event. And I believe that was your very topic is self-reliance, financial. I don't remember the title, but that was the content of your talk, self-reliance and what that.
Yeah, and you have to be, and you have to know what's going on. And I think didn't I see you in Orlando too? Did I see you in Orlando as well?
I think so. Yeah.
We did. Yeah,
spoke there. I spoke there. Yes.
Yeah.
You gave the same talk there, right?
Yeah. But then I got into about the influence of private equity, and I said,
yeah.
Who owns Hilton Hotels?
The very place we were at.
The very place we were at. I said this was owned by Blackstone.
Remember.
So people don't understand it. And actually, Hilton Hotels really is not that. Well, I'm not going to get into that investment advice on that. But so everything is, So the whole thing is that we really need to get back to the fundamentals and. Have good habits and, stay away from junk food, the Wall Street's trying to sell us, whether it be cryptocurrencies or, private credit or private debt, all these things which are so fee-laden and they're non-transparent. And I guess maybe when you understand like a properly designed life policy for someone, James, or annuity or something like that, this total transparency.
Total
transparency. You tell people how this actual thing works. If I have private credit, whatever, I have no idea because everything's done in secrecy. And when people do things in secrecy, they're always hiding something. And that's what Wall Street excels at today. That's why I want private credit. It means it's everything's done in secrecy. And this is why, because it's private.
Yeah,
and these sidecar agreements and all this other crap, whatever. So what we need to really is we need to be a light on the hill, and that's why I'm so blessed that you're in my life because we need lights on the hill like you. I mean, otherwise, we have it was in the Bible they talk about, but we need that now more than ever.
Well, thank you for saying that. I appreciate you. You're a light in my life, and I think you're a light in the industry. I've been in boardrooms where Mr. Dyke is like not calling people to the carpet, but preaching the truth, spitting the truth.
Oh, geez, that's right.
and several times. And, some of these things are not easy to hear. Right. If you're, you know, in a corporate, you know, boardroom, whatever, and you're somebody big, high powered, you know, or you're the all-American individual, you know, just trying to not go broke, not be broke, trying to do better. And then, you know, you talk about discipline, work harder, work longer, and do whatever, and all these things that may or may not be required to get ahead. These are not easy things to hear, you know, so.
It's funny. Yeah, I remember, you know, I can laugh about it now. I don't want to get into it, but I remember
we catch up.
I was on an advisory board for a major company in America, a major life company in America. And they you know, because they were talking about this is probably a decade ago. This
don't say anything I have to cut out, okay? I don't want to
bring that. Amen. So. So anyway, I got kicked out because I was kicked off. It was a, you know, great place to get kicked off, but it was a real honor, you know. But you know, it's just they were talking about diversity and stuff. And I said, I thought you had me here for helping me with your retirement plans, you know. So it's a crazy world we live in, but.
Well, what's the solution? And I'm not trying to sound clickbaity or at all. But really, what is the average all-American? When I say average, I'm not saying in a derogatory, negative way. I'm talking about the backbone of America, all-American individual, you know, who's working from daylight to dark more than they want to, you know, feeling like they're drowning in debt, you know, feeling like they can't get ahead. You know, what's the solution? I mean, what is it? What is it that we might need to, you know, what do we do? What do we do?
Well, you know, I always tell it's kind of my five F's, James. I think I've gone through the fourth. You get to have faith, you know, in a higher power or whatever, you know, God, whatever. That's really the most important thing in my life. The second thing is, you know, you got to believe in your family, you know. Thirdly, you know, you got to do this with friends. No one can do this out with friends. Then fourth, you have to be physically fit, I think, first, and then finances. But those are kind of my five S. And but the first thing is really is learning how to save and also, you know, having discipline. And how can you become good in anything unless you have discipline? You want to be a good instrument or a sport or anything. Like, you have to have some discipline. And stop listening to all this distraction society. I mean, everyone's scrolling. You know, I laid just my phone. I was talking about stop scrolling. You know, it's just like the only way you're really going to benefit from anything is you focus and you work on stuff. So I think really that's the first thing. First, you get to really focus on saving first, then investing. I think really those are the main things first. And then when you understand places where you can save in this country, you've said, oh my goodness, this life insurance thing is one of the best places I can save anywhere. Why hasn't anyone told me this? Because they don't want to hear it. Because they want to gamble with your money so they can make freaking fees. And they want to transfer all the risk.
Discipline to save is much harder to do than abdicate my responsibility. Okay, I've decided to save. So I'm going to now go enroll in the 401k, which I opted out of. It's like, well, that's not savings, number one. There's not even a fundamental understanding of savings, right? But it's easier to do that. It's easier for somebody to take money out of my paycheck than it is for me to receive it after taxes and then apply the discipline of not spending it, wasting it, and actually saving it. So, and I'm saying that because, you know, the risk, it's much easier if I haven't been disciplined. And it's easier for people to take, the employer to take money out of my paycheck because I don't have the discipline to save it. So I'm going to do that. And it's going to be painful because I haven't done that before. It's almost like, I don't want to say it's a poor excuse for discipline.
Yeah.
Right? It's just a poor, and I'm not bashing qualified plans or any of that. I'm just saying it's another example of if you don't do it, no one's going to do it for you. Do what? I don't know. I like your five, you know, the faith, the foundation of faith, family, friends, and health. And if you, you know, burn your health up, chasing all the risk and returns and you know, that has, I mean, that's going to be the result. But when it comes to finances, right, the discipline of savings and the focus on savings and education. See, I'd add education into that, all of them, because even health, you need education, in my humble opinion, to be healthy, you know, a good education. And then if you're faithful, you know, it's like if you buy the narrative of every doctrine on the face of this earth, whatever it is, I mean, you can wander off the reservation really easy. So it's okay to have good education on whatever it is you believe. Go deep and go broad, you know, is my point. And I'm not even trying to preach, but I think education is a big deal. I think discipline is a really big deal. You know, you talked about working out and eating. We all know that. I don't know what the numbers are. The saying is it's, you know, 80% of what you put in your mouth, 20% what you do in the gym, kind of a deal. I mean, I'm fat for a reason, right? I like food. I get it. But discipline, the discipline of savings, the education of what is savings compared to investing. Maybe, you know, you like a particular investment over another. Maybe you like one savings vehicle over another. But it's being educated and then disciplined to do it. You know, I've been in the life insurance business a long, long time, and it's not the only thing I do, but you know, I'm a husband, a brother, you know, a son, a father, an uncle. You know, I do a lot more than, you know, what I do for a profession or in my profession. Anyway. I have experienced personally, and I have seen people experience it, whether they're clients or not clients. They get exposed to this idea that you can become your own banker before you can finance anything. You got to accumulate some capital. You spend a little time and a little focus, a little discipline in accumulating this capital. I've seen them wake up, whether it's a year, 2 years, or whatever, and then look at their cash values. And they're shocked. Oh my gosh. You know, I can get mad and quit and walk away with that, or I can just demand a loan against that. And it still is not, I'm not burning it down to collateralize it. And it's humoring, it's fulfilling, it's gratifying, and it's a little bit humorous because, you know, we looked at all these a year ago, these numbers accumulating. This is what's possible. If you do this, this will be very possible. And they don't get lost on that. They stay in the focus of paying the premium and paying the premium, right? And paying the premium, making the loan repayment. Then they look up and they're shocked. I love that. And what I want to point out and confirm and reaffirm and encourage one to consider is that you can do an awful lot if you focus. You can do an awful lot. And if it comes to paying a premium, accumulating capital with life insurance, I mean, you'll be shocked. And I've seen it. And it's humorous. And it's gratifying. It's joyful, you know? So.
All you need is a Mickey Mouse plan, James, right?
Which one is that? Tell me, refresh my memory.
The Mickey Mouse plan. That's what
Walt Disney.
When everyone turned him down, everyone thought he was crazy, you know.
Yeah.
Great Disneyland. You know that old story where Walt Disney, everyone turned him down, his bankers turned him down, his employees, they went bankrupt a couple times too, but everyone turned him down. And he sold his house. He had a pump, he had a vacation home or winter home in Palm Springs. He sold that, and he borrowed money from some of his employees, but he borrowed $200,000 back. You know, this is 52, so this is a ton of money back then. Become with the plans for Disneyland, Anaheim, California. And so he used, but the majority of the funds, the fund of the grand design for Disneyland came from a life insurance plan, life insurance loan. So all we need, folks, is a Mickey Mouse plan.
So I'm glad you brought that up, because
it's true.
But it was two. I've never seen the numbers, you know. So he borrowed $200,000.
$200,000 borrowed, yeah.
In policy loans.
Yeah, so that'd be like $2 million a day.
You know? Oh, yeah, every bit. So that means that if he was borrowing $200,000, he had a little bit more than that in cash value. Somebody had been paying really big premiums, for a long time. That's some real numbers. You have that? Can
yeah,
you?
Yeah, it's number? In my first book. Yeah, it's roughly $200,000, and there was essentially three components.
In your first book, I've read your first book 18 years ago, and that one.
Yeah, it was about $200,000, and so it was essentially, there was three components of it. There was loans from his employees, the sale of a Palm Springs home in California, but the majority of it, 80% of it or so, came from a big life insurance loan. And that came up, that was essentially was the funds to create the Anaheim. And I love it because it's also a story of triumph. Everyone else said it, because I love it because they said, Walt, you're nuts. You can't have a clean theme park with your family. Now, unfortunately, Walt Disney must be rolling over in his grave today. Because
no question.
So in 2024 or 2025, Disney, because the stock's been going down dramatically, announced that they're going to get into the sports betting industry with ESPN. So you know, Mickey Mouse is now meeting Sin City. You know.
Yeah. Yeah. No. There's that's a whole. You could write a whole book on some of these. Really respectable people that have built really successful companies and wholesome type companies. You know, Ford is an example, and I'm not, you know, they get, they create these foundations, and they create, you know, all this stuff that they build while they're alive that's relatively good and productive and profitable. You know, it seems like most of them have been taken over not too many years after they graduate.
Yeah, it's sad.
It is sad. But anywho, all right, what else? Did we miss anything, Barry? I like not having a script whenever I speak with you, sir.
No, yeah, we could talk, as I said, I'm coming out with a piece on BlackRock. Which needs to be done, and then when the other book comes out, we'll do some more stuff, because this is really, really important stuff for people, you know, and it's not just about me. The next generation is going to benefit more, but what they're doing today with you know, people's savings plans, it's criminal. So. By convincing people to do the right thing, or by buying like Whole Life, which is kind of like buying organic food, you're never going to have any argument with me. And there's a cost to do anything, but there's a larger cost in not doing the right thing. And you know, I think what you're doing a great job, John, James, helping people insulate them from the Wall Street casino. And I'll close this with one closing thought. What's the difference between Las Vegas and Manhattan?
I know exactly, sir.
You do, huh?
I do. I sure do. One is in the desert.
One casino is in the desert.
Yeah.
And then the other, yep. The other one's a casino on the island of Manhattan.
Yeah, one of them's in the desert. Same thing occurs in both places, both locations.
Yeah, so I think, you know, now what you're doing is more important than anything. And, you know, it's just, and it's good stuff. And it, you know, and you know, it's, you're also, you know, helping love, you know, showing love of family in the next generation.
Yep, I agree. I agree. All right, well. Thank you, Barry, for taking the time to come and visit with us. It's always a great pleasure.
And tell people they go to barryjamesdyke.com. I should have brought that up because they get on a mail list and they get the books or they get them from you. But I also have they can sign up on the mail list and we'll keep them abreast of as these things come about.
I got you. BarryJamesDyke.com. You can buy them from us, but you can buy them from him. I'd rather him handle them than me, but you know, whatever's easy, whatever your preference is, BarryJamesDyke.com. And you have a newsletter that they can sign up for, and all of the books that you've authored, they can purchase there as well, right?
That's right.
Perfect. All right. Thank you, sir. Have a great rest of your day. Okay.
God bless. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us on the Banking with Life podcast. If you're watching on YouTube, make sure to like and subscribe and click on that little notification bell. Otherwise, join us on Apple Podcasts and Stitcher for weekly content.